This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Friday, June 19th, 2020. I'm Caleb Brown. When you read a news story about a police shooting, you see phrases like "officer involved," as if the police played some less than clear role in the shooting, or that the bullet that struck the victim was the ultimate culprit, or that the officer's weapon discharged, as if it was the gun's decision to fire. Washington Post columnist and Cato Institute media fellow Radley Balco calls it the exonerative tense. And for reporters trying to reasonably present even basic facts about police shootings to the public, the twisty turns of phrase presented by police agencies pose a special but not insurmountable challenge. There is this sort of way that reporters write about, and I'll just use the term they use, police-involved shootings. It seems that there are mental gymnastics or linguistic gymnastics that they go through in order to, you know, make it appear as if it wasn't a police officer who shot someone, or at least present it in such a way that it would be reasonable for your takeaway to be that what actually occurred is not actually what occurred.
Right. I call it the exonerative tense, and it's, I think media in a lot of ways are just sort of mimicking what they see in police reports and hear from police spokespeople, but it's this way of kind of deflecting responsibility for what you've done. And so the way, you know, it's often phrased, as you'll see, you know, after confronting a, you know, 24-year-old black male, the officer's gun fired, the suspect was struck by a bullet fired from an officer's gun.
The weapon discharged.
You know, it reminds you of the kind of classic trope about, you know, the politician who's just been caught in a major scandal, and they give a speech where they say, you know, mistakes were made, right? A lot of times it's grammatically the passive tense, but sometimes it's not passive. It's just this kind of way of removing kind of direct responsibility for what happened. And you contrast that to, you know, police reports about people, you know, suspected of committing crimes, and it's always, you know, the suspect then did X. The suspect then, you know, assaulted X. But when it's a police officer, it's always the gun that did the shooting or the bullet that did the damage, and never the officer.
Years ago when I was a reporter, I can remember going to a home where police were already on the scene. It was a shooting. And I remember very clearly asking the public information officer out front, was the body found inside or outside of the house? And he told me, that is under investigation. there are these times when you are dependent as a reporter on information directly from a police department, and they won't even say who did what. Like, right. Things that are not in dispute, they won't necessarily say. So for reporters that are trying to deal with that and try to, you know, one, avoid some liability for saying the wrong thing, but also are just trying to present the best version of events, what should they do?
Well, I mean, you write what you know to be true, and you write it in the active voice, and you don't sort of parrot police lines that tend to phrase things in a way that eschew responsibility. I have a couple reactions to what you just said. I think, I've used the phrase officer-involved shooting, and I don't particularly like it. But there are also, you know, there are some times when it makes sense because you're trying to distinguish a shooting committed by an officer versus an officer who was shot, right? So if you say police shootings, that could be interpreted as a police officer who was shot as opposed to one who did the shooting. So sometimes, sort of depending on the space and the context of what you're writing, officer involved shooting, I don't like it. But you know, some of these examples are much more absurd and extreme and often hilarious than that. But I do think there's this interesting question about local reporters and beat reporters, because you know, I kind of, I'm a opinion journalist. I work at the Post. I do a lot of investigative reporting, but I also had the advantage of being able to kind of parachute into a city or county or whatever, where something has happened. And I can write my story and I can be very critical of the police. And then I can go back to my, fly back to Nashville and continue my, my job, you know, with the Washington Post. Beat reporters, you know, rely on police departments to be able to do their jobs. I think you see, I've also been critical of the amount of reverence and sort of deference that, that local reporters give to local police. But I can also understand it because, if you anger them, they can make it a lot more difficult for you to do your job. I'd like to see reporters generally be more skeptical of law enforcement sources, but I mean, it is definitely a problem. It's particularly a problem when with the kind of death of newspapers, where there's increasingly less competition among newspapers.
Yeah, I know that when there are cases in which the police have shot and sometimes killed somebody, that there's almost inevitably one or two stories that come out within days, which is a complete rundown of every negative interaction that that individual, the dead individual, had with police.
Yeah. Well, that comes straight from the police department. I mean, to give an even more extreme example, there's a case in Texas a few years ago. The guy still hasn't been to trial yet, but it was another raid where the police actually didn't find any drugs, where they didn't announce themselves until they had already battered down the door. And this guy grabbed a gun and shot and killed one of the police officers. And it was in a small town in Texas. And a local reporter there was covering it with the what I would consider the appropriate amount of scrutiny and skepticism. And his paper took him off the story, and he was eventually fired from the paper. And he was told by his editors that the paper did not want to jeopardize its relationship with the police department. I think it's a thing you see much more in small towns. There are plenty of big city newspapers, I think, that are too deferential as well. But in big cities, you tend to have at least, some competition, if not from another newspaper, then maybe from a local news station. You know, somebody is going to start digging around and maybe get the story out. But in smaller towns, it's really a problem.
Do you have any evidence, or is there literature on how people tend to view these stories, depending on how they're written?
No, that's interesting. I don't know how you would structure such a study, but that would be interesting. I will say that, my in the 15 years or so I've been writing about this stuff, when you see a raid like the Breonna Taylor raid, when I first started writing this, you'd go to the comment section on a news, local news site, and it'd almost always be, thank God, that criminal is dead, or that thug is dead, or, lots of defending of the police, thank God they're defending us every day. And I will say, increasingly, I see skepticism and questions about these kinds of tactics. And, that's very sort of anecdotal and subjective. It's my kind of impression over the years of how that tenor has changed. But I think there's much more skepticism and willingness to kind of question these kinds of types of tactics, particularly when they're used, to enforce, nonviolent crimes like drug crimes.
Bradley Balko is a media fellow at the Cato Institute and a columnist at the Washington Post. Subscribe to the Cato Daily Podcast wherever you please, and follow us on Twitter @CatoPodcast.